The fourth argument for atheism and its refutation. The fourth argument presented by atheists against the existence of God is also based on the theory of evolution. It is claimed that the religious teachings about the creation of the universe and creation of the human beings is shown to be inaccurate in light of the theory of evolution. This proves that the religious teachings are false and contrary to evidence, thus disproving the concept of God as presented by the religious teachings. This question has also been addressed in detail. The fifth argument for atheism and its refutation. The fifth argument presented by atheists is that the law of nature attributed to a higher being is random and sometimes acts ruthlessly. The randomness of this law is proof in itself that this cannot be the work of a wise being. On the contrary, they argue that by studying the laws of nature, it becomes clear that the universe runs on natural transformation and the system of cause and effect. They give the examples of disasters afflicting innocent people, leading to loss of life and suffering, epidemics of diseases, birth of physically and mentally disabled children, and personal decline after a period of success. They say that these occurrences of daily life prove that there is no God, otherwise such indiscriminate calamities and misfortunes would never take place. This objection has not been dealt with so far and needs to be answered in some detail. It is essential to distinguish the law of nature from the law of Sharia. The objection has arisen because the critics have not reflected deeply on two sets of laws enforced in this world by God. They think that the whole world is functioning under one set of laws. The truth is that God has ordained two different sets of laws for this world. One is the law of nature, which relates to the organization of this universe. This comprises of the system of cause and effect and the properties of various elements. We observe the impact of this law at all times. The second is the law of Sharia, which relates to the moral and spiritual aspects of man and is revealed through prophets and messengers, and it operates on the principle of reward and punishment that will be experienced in the life after death. The above objection has arisen as a result of mixing up the two sets of laws and not properly differentiating between them. What is the law of nature? The law of nature is that everything, every motion, every stillness, as well as each and every object of the world, has an innate ability to exert a certain effect. For example, the law of nature is that if ingested in a certain quantity, arsenic will kill a living being unless another law of nature counteracts the actions of arsenic and nullifies its effect. Likewise, it is in keeping with the law of nature that when a critical point of weakness has been reached, the roof will collapse and would kill anyone who is underneath unless another law of nature intervenes to save this person. Similarly, it is in keeping with the law of nature that a person who does not know how to swim will drown in deep waters unless an alternative way of nature saves him through an intervention. Thus, it is part of nature that anything, no matter how advanced, will be adversely affected if it does not have the ability to counter the power of harmful and damaging forces. All this, and countless others, are part of the law of nature whereby everything produces its natural effect, and the wheels of this great machine are perpetually set in motion. These laws do not discriminate between friend or foe. Under normal circumstances, in pursuance of the duties assigned to them, they are obliged to raise up or drop down, push forward or pull backwards anyone who is at the receiving end. There are exceptions which pertain to special divine decrees under a special independent law and are manifested in the form of miracles and acceptance of prayers through the prophets and awliya. As opposed to the above, what is the law of Sharia? It is the law and code of conduct revealed by God for the followers of a religion so that they reform their morals, get closer to God, and partake of the favors and blessings reserved for the righteous. Under this law, everyone is granted the free will to abide by it or not, and the reward or retribution of one's deeds is determined in the life after death, except for some veiled effects that appear in this world. For instance, Sharia urges people to worship God in a prescribed way in order to attain his nearness and pleasure, but does not force them to do so. If one wants to defy it, he is free to do so and is not forced to follow this law. The effects of this defiance may appear in this world in a subtle way, but the real and definite punishment is deferred to the hereafter. There is a saying among the sages, "This world is the place for deeds, and the next is the place for reward and punishment." As for the law of nature, however, this world is both for deeds and for recompense. The two laws do not interfere with each other except in exceptional circumstances, the mention of which here is not necessary. Anyone who violates the law of nature is not spared the consequences on the grounds that he did not violate the law of the Sharia. He will certainly suffer the consequences of violating the law of nature, and compliance with the law of Sharia cannot save him from that. Consider, for example, if a roof collapsed on two people, one pious and the other a sinner, in accordance with the law of nature, both will die or both will survive, depending on the way the roof fell. It would not simply be the case that the pious one is saved and the evil one dies. Similarly, if a pious and God-fearing person who does not know how to swim jumps into deep water, he will not be saved from drowning merely because he is pious. His piety relates to the law of Sharia, and water is under the law of nature. The law of nature normally is not influenced by the law of Sharia. In short, as a general rule, the law of Sharia only determines the recompense of a good or bad deed within Sharia and has no bearing on the recompense determined by the law of nature, and vice versa. It is absurd for the atheist to support their belief with this. As for instance, a pious and righteous person who had young children went for a bath in the river and drowned, whereas an evil person bathing in the river at the same time returned home safe and sound. A very chaste and well-behaved girl caught fire and died a day after her marriage, while an unchaste and ill-mannered girl married the same day lived happily ever after. An innocent and good-natured boy was crushed to death by a falling roof, whereas an evil and filthy boy playing there went out moments earlier and escaped harm, etc. On the basis of such instances, the atheists argue that if there was a God, such outrage and injustice would not have taken place. If one thinks carefully, this objection is weak and absurd. The person who drowned violated the law of nature and suffered accordingly, though he conformed to the Sharia. The other had not violated the law of nature and therefore was not liable to any penalty under that law, though he was on the wrong side of the law of Sharia. The same applies to the girl who caught fire and died. She fell afoul of the law of nature and perished. That was determined by the law of nature, and conforming to the Sharia was of no avail. The other girl, though guilty of contravention of Sharia, escaped any punishment under the law of nature, as she did not violate any law of nature. So there is no disorder or injustice. The laws of nature treat everyone as an equal. Indeed, it would be most unfair if the laws of nature punished people even if they have broken no laws, or if people were punished through the laws of nature for breaking the laws of Sharia, or vice versa. This is not how it all works. Nature punishes for violation of its laws, and Sharia punishes for violation of its laws, with exceptions that form another topic altogether and need not be mentioned here. This cannot be regarded as objectionable or unwise by any sane person. I wonder what kind of wisdom and intelligence critics have to raise such objections. How can they consider a process full of wisdom which breaks no law and does not create any conflict between the two sets of laws as contrary to justice? Unfortunately, all of this is a result of a big misunderstanding. When the reason for an incident which takes place under the law of nature is sought in the law of Sharia, and when they fail to find any explanation, they call it unfair. O ye unfortunate one, may God bestow wisdom upon you. Seek explanation of natural occurrences in the law of nature and of Sharia punishment in the law of Sharia. Then you will come to realize that there is no injustice at all. In fact, what you are suggesting is injustice. Indeed, it is a great injustice to suggest that an accidental death of a person by burning, drowning, or a collapsed building, which is in concordance with the laws of nature, cannot be fair because he has committed no sin according to the law of Sharia. Most regrettably, it is preposterous to attribute the law of Sharia for acts of nature and vice versa, and then blame God for this. Remember, Sharia and nature are two separate laws that do not interfere with the affairs of each other, just like civilized worldly governments. However, under very special circumstances, God may command one set of laws to come into action in order to support the other. For instance, when prophets and messengers are ordained and there is eagerness in the heavens for reformation of the world, the forces of nature are made subservient to the cause of Sharia. Such exceptional decrees are manifested as miracles and divine signs. In general, however, the law of nature and law of Sharia act independently of each other and neither interfere with nor step aside for each other. The whole misconception stems from amalgamating the two sets of laws and failing to recognize them as independent entities. Transmigration of souls. The doctrine of transmigration of souls or reincarnation is also based on a similar misunderstanding. Those who believe in this doctrine argue that children are born in different situations as a result of their actions in a past life. That is why some babies are born weak or healthy, blind or sighted, able-bodied or disabled, intelligent or unintelligent, and rich or poor. Otherwise, they ask, if there was no previous life and no record of good and bad deeds, how do we explain the difference? Could we say that God is unjust in bringing children of the same species into the world under such diverse circumstances? If not, then there is no explanation other than a previous life. The believers in reincarnation have also failed to see the difference between the law of Sharia and the law of nature and use one law to measure everything. They have not realized that differences at birth are not related to the law of Sharia but have to do with the law of nature. The child inherits the physical, economical, and moral conditions of his parents and ancestors, which vary from family to family. Medical science, which is based on the law of nature, has established that if parents are healthy, the children are likely to be healthy, but if the parents are fragile, so shall be the children. Even physical features are inherited by children. This science is so vast and established by repeated experiments and observations that it cannot be refuted. It has also been shown that the condition of man and woman at the time of conception of a baby also deeply affects the child. In view of this, the Islamic Sharia has very wisely advised men and women to purify their hearts and minds when they try for a baby so that the child should inherit their purity of mind. In short, medical science has found that effects of the parents and ancestors are passed down to the children, and it is because of this that some children are born healthy while others are weak. Some are born normal while others have some birth defects. This is a general law of nature, also mentioned in the Holy Quran, that everything has an impact on its surroundings, chapter 16, verse 49. Everything in this world depends on others for its survival, and everything can be influenced by other things in the universe. Thus, an offspring which is the closest to his parents is influenced by the good and bad traits of his parents. So the notion that babies are born with different characteristics as a result of their deeds in a previous birth is erroneous and absurd. This misunderstanding arises because people seek the cause of acts of nature in the law of Sharia. The ideas of atheists and those who believe in reincarnation are based on the same error. Both have failed to identify the distinction between the law of nature and the law of Sharia. They have sought the cause of acts of nature in the law of Sharia. As they were unable to find a reasonable explanation, one group concluded that it was all anarchy and the idea of God was baseless. The others argued that God is not unjust and would not punish anyone without reason. So the disparity among newborn children must be rooted in their previous births, hence the doctrine of reincarnation. Had they pondered, they would have easily understood that God has ordained two sets of laws acting independently of each other, and it is a grave error to seek the cause of acts of nature in the laws of Sharia. To summarize, the righteous and the innocent sometimes suffer during natural calamities, diseases, and disasters. This is only because the law of nature is different from the law of Sharia. A good deed in conformity with Sharia on its own cannot protect one from the penalties incurred under the law of nature. For this, precautions prescribed in the law of nature are required. For instance, the event of drowning follows the law of nature, and a righteous person will have to learn to swim and take other precautions to save himself from drowning, just like anyone else. Just being righteous will not save him from drowning in water. Similarly, the birth of a disabled baby is an act of nature, and seeking its cause in the Sharia is pointless. Here, parents need to turn to the law of nature, and parents should seek the cure for their sickness, weakness, and defects, and focus on improving the environmental factors that lead to such disabilities. It is essential for human progress that the law of nature remains separate and independent of the Sharia. One may ask why the law of nature does not submit to the law of the Sharia and why a righteous and God-fearing person is not saved from mishaps and misfortunes. The first answer, as already explained, is that the two laws are different and work independently, yet the scenario presented by the objector requires that the two laws amalgamate. However, their separate existence indicates that they were meant to remain independent. The second and actual answer is that God ordained the two sets of laws for two kinds of progress of man. The law of nature leads to material progress, and the law of Sharia is required for moral and spiritual progress. If conformity with the law of Sharia were to protect against the ill consequences of the violation of the law of nature, this would have hindered one's material progress. For instance, if the righteousness of a man were to protect him from drowning, burning, or electrical hazards, then he would have no motivation to learn about or understand harmful processes or to find ways to control them. Remember, the material progress of a person is possible only because he knows that unless he studies the law of nature and properties of matter, he will not be able to discover the means of welfare, comfort, and progress for himself. That is why man is always engaged in the study of nature and properties of elements. They say, necessity is the mother of invention. If the material needs of man are fulfilled merely by conforming to Sharia, then nobody will waste their time in the study of nature and properties of elements. All material progress will come to a standstill and material knowledge will come to an end. Therefore, it is pure divine grace that the two laws of nature and Sharia do not interfere with each other. Some calamities are also forerunners of this blessing, as after facing calamities, one develops awareness and motivation to find ways to avoid these in future. Thus, measures taken after the loss of a few lives lead to saving millions of lives from future hazards. In short, both of these laws are meant to bring about different kinds of progress for mankind. If the two laws were to amalgamate or give way to each other, it would be very harmful and detrimental for the progress of mankind. The fact is that the parallel working of these two laws is entirely appropriate and highly judicious for the collective welfare and progress of mankind, and one cannot think of anything better. Sometimes pious and righteous people meet apparently untimely deaths as a result of accidents or some other law of nature, leaving their relatives in a state of extraordinary shock or loss. According to the teaching of Islam, God provides for the bereaved family out of his mercy in some other ways. God enforces his law for the welfare and progress of the world and does not break his law for anyone under normal circumstances. However, he is at the same time very kind to his good people and most faithful to them. Therefore, on such occasions, he most surely compensates their losses by some other means. For example, for sufferings in this world, he grants them special reward in the hereafter, generously provides for their progeny the blessings of this world, or demonstrates some other means of mercy and justice without compromising the rights of others. As for the children who are born with weaknesses and disability which hinder their spiritual progress, Islam teaches us that God will consider their disability on the Day of Judgment. They will not be accountable for deeds which were beyond their control, nor will they suffer any loss of reward because of their physical disability. God says in the Quran that his law of recompense takes into account every act of goodness for reward and does not ignore any extenuating factor. Why is there sin in the world? It is essential to dispel another doubt here. Why is there sin, injustice, and transgression in the world? It is argued that if God existed, people would never freely indulge in sin, injustice, and tyranny, and the world would be free of evil. These critics have not understood the purpose and philosophy of the law of Sharia. Sharia provides people with a code of conduct and explains that they need to adhere to it, and their moral and spiritual progress cannot take place without this. After this explanation, people are given the choice to accept or reject this code of conduct. The one who accepts this code of conduct is rewarded with blessings and piety according to his level of commitment and gains nearness to God. One who chooses to reject this code of conduct deprives himself from its blessings. This rejection of divine code of conduct is also called sin and transgression. Therefore, sin is not created by God, but is the result of the deeds of man. Therefore, to argue against God because there is sin in this world, or infer that sin happens because there is no God, is erroneous and absolutely absurd. God has sown the seed of good in human nature, and to prosper and flourish this seed, he has revealed his Sharia. Then, through his signs and revelations, he has made it crystal clear that their prosperity and salvation lies in adhering to the code of conduct of the Sharia. Despite this, if someone chooses not to follow God's Sharia, then it is the fault of that person and not of God. He is deprived as a result of his own doing and not an act of God. What is sin? It is an act of disobedience to God and to follow a path against the guidance of God. Thus, sin results from one's own conduct. Should God have refrained from guiding us only because some people would not follow his guidance? Do you expect a father to stop advising his son for fear that the son may become guilty of disobeying him? These are arguments of ignorance, and every wise person should avoid them. To summarize, the sins and injustices are brought about by people's own doings, and God bears no responsibility for this. No sensible person can argue against the existence of God on account of sin. What God has ordained is sheer and absolute mercy. The one who fails to benefit from this mercy is accountable for his own deeds. One may ask, why did God not frame the Sharia law such that it is not possible to break it and everyone would be compelled to adhere to this? In this case, they maintain there would be no sin and everyone would be pious and virtuous. The answer to this question is that under such circumstances, the very purpose of man's creation would have been lost. The purpose is that man should make progress through his own efforts and through his righteous deeds, qualified to become a recipient of God's favors and honors, ultimately gaining his nearness. If everyone was forced to conform to the divinely revealed Sharia, all the doors of progress would be closed on man. No one would merit favors and honors, and all effort and struggle would be in vain. It has to be understood that, to merit favors, man must be free to choose between good and evil of his own free will. If man was under compulsion to adopt a certain path, then there would be no distinction between those who love righteousness and those who do not, those who follow the right path and those who do not, those who exercise self-control and those who do not, those who hold steadfast and those who do not, those who work hard and those who do not. No difference would exist between a doer of good and an evil-doer. Likewise, the progress that can be achieved through competition to excel one another in acts of goodness would come to a standstill. There would be no motivation to make progress. Man would freeze in a static condition or become like an angel who is compelled by his creation to stick to the right path and cannot even slightly deviate from God's will. The wise say that the righteous man has a rank above angels because man adopts virtue of his preference after due consideration, whereas an angel is confined in a state of virtue and therefore the good deeds of an angel are not counted as such. That is why the Quran says about man, لَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي أَحْسَنِ تَقْوِيمٍ. Footnote, Surah At-Teen, Chapter 95, Verse 5. End of footnote. Surely of all the creation we have created man in the best make. No other creation compares with man. In short, man's free will is a mark of his excellence, and sin results from misuse of this will. Sin is not created by God, but results from denial of God's mercy. Sin, therefore, cannot be presented as an argument against the existence of God.